Good morning. The A-League final series starts tomorrow night in Melbourne. Both Melbourne teams are involved across the weekend. Caps a season that has failed to harness any momentum. The Code's free-to-air deal is a failure, and the deterioration in the Fox Sports numbers is truly alarming. In terms of exposure, the A-League peaked, plateaued, and is now in decline. It will soon move from the control of Football Federation Australia into the hands of the owners. And while the aspirations are grand, the realities are already biting. To find a place in the conversation, it needs three pulsating weeks. But even if it does, are enough of us drawn to pay attention? Again this week, the national participation numbers affirmed soccer's power. 1.75 million participants at grassroots levels. And that serves to reinforce the question of why it isn't helping the game at the top end. We'll explore all of this with David Gallop, the chief executive of FFA, who will join me at 10. The first Thursday in May sees something of a pilgrimage to Warrnambool for the grand annual steeplechase and the cup. I've had the good fortune to go to racing carnivals around the country and a few around the world. As if you want to understand the true character of a town, I reckon you can see it through the prism of the racing carnival. So the bull is very pure. It's for the real racing folk. It's hard bitten from the weather and from the punt. I remember going as a kid with my dad, and I remember going with my father-in-law for a few years in a row not that long ago. The last time I was there was when a horse ended up in the crowd. Only two finished the grand annual, and jumps racing was almost shut down. And on the drive home in 2011, I wondered if that might be the last time. But since that debacle, it brought reform, it brought rejuvenation, and there is a thriving sense of community pride that we tapped into on Tuesday, which gets its full expression today. If you're on the road to the bull, I probably would like to live vicariously through you, to be honest. 1-300-736-736. What draws you to Warrnambool on this Thursday? What takes you back or what has you heading there as a first-timer? 1-300-736-736. Give me a shout and we'll head to the bull in the middle hour of the show as well. On a footy front, it's mouth guards in at training at Melbourne and West Coast. Simon Goodwin and Adam Simpson are happy to risk injury for a bit of shock therapy on the training track. And David King is looking forward with an increasing sense of relish to tomorrow night's Collingwood-Port Adelaide encounter.
I think that most people just think, oh, Collingwood at home, Friday night footy, they'll come, they'll get it done. But if you're a believer in the numbers, which clearly I am, the profiles of these two teams has changed enormously over the last 12 months, from 2018 to 2019. Collingwood are relying more on scoring from out of the back half, whereas Port have flipped the other way, which is far more sustainable. So I think if you've got your doubts on Port Adelaide, well, you should think again, because they're the hardest team to move the ball against in the competition, and they've got these kids we keep talking about. But I want to park all that, because their leaders have been unbelievable this year. I think that this is a real line in the sand game for Port Adelaide.
Yep.
At this early stage, if they can come over and get this one, that, gee, they flip the competition on its head. Most people are saying Collingwood, on the back of names and these sorts of things, going beautifully, and they're doing a great job. They're 4-2.
Haven't played
but
a full game yet.
There's a few chinks where I think Port Adelaide, if they bring their best, it'll be one hell of a game. This will be the best Friday night game that we have for the year. It'll be a belter.
So that's the setup from David King. He can see a chink or two at Collingwood and feels like he's all in on Port. So we will see tomorrow night. It's Marvel, isn't it? Is it Marvel? Yes, it is. Collingwood and Port Adelaide. The AFL Nation call will be right here on SEN. Nick Riewoldt starts a Thursday with me. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Jared.
How are you?
I'm very well. Very well. Looking forward to tomorrow night. That is going to be an absolute ripper. And Port Adelaide's kids have, I think, exceeded expectations this year. And the risk that Ken Hinckley was prepared to take in just playing them, just rolling the dice round one, because it is a risk with young kids. You're never sure how they're going to respond. And now, really, Port Adelaide's season is going to go as their kids go, because they have such a large concentration of them in the one team. And so far, they've been absolutely brilliant.
They've risen to the challenges, haven't they? So round one was thrilling for them. The trip to Perth to face the reigning premier on a showpiece night. They get a look at Friday night footy against a big club in Melbourne. So that's So you sort of tick off those experiences in your first year. That this is a big one.
It is. But as far as experiences go, a full Adelaide Oval in the entire football calendar now, a full Adelaide Oval, a Port Adelaide home game. I've done a couple this year and did a few. That is just a brilliant atmosphere. It's a great ground to play at. I bumped into Connor Rosie and might have been Xavier Dersma earlier in the, but just before the game. Yep. So they were just standing in the race waiting, and we were walking around to speak to the coaches as we've been afforded the opportunity this year before games to be able to do that. And they were just excited, young kids. They both said, oh, it's just such a great place to play footy. We're just so lucky. So they're embracing it. They're not overwhelmed by the prospect of being really important players in their first year for their teams.
Physical training sessions. So we're six rounds in. Adam Simpson has spoken publicly about what he hasn't liked and players putting their head over the ball. Not enough in his eyes. So by all accounts, he sent them out to train and to train with the risk of injury for that sort of shock therapy. And obviously Melbourne did that yesterday. Simon Goodwin sort of spoke with a bit of a sense of satisfaction. Sometimes this is what it looks like. And when you train with it in great intensity, you get it on the field. Can you remember those days?
Oh, yeah. These are the line in the sand moments for coaches. You always arrive to pre-season sessions with your heart in your mouth a little bit as to what are they going to come up with today to absolutely smash us and push us right to the brink of being able to deal with the load of training. That this, once you go to an in-season training program, that completely disappears. You're basically, well, you're not on easy street with training, but it becomes far more about recovery, mm-hmm. and then the weekend becomes your training session, your really big one, until the coach throws something like this in. And you really do have to abandon that conservatism of trying to nurse players through, because there is a risk when you declare mouth guards are out, there is a risk that you will lose someone. So the situation must be, I guess, pretty dire to go to that. And as a young player, it was particularly a day like today where it's in Melbourne, where it's pouring with rain and you go out and it's cold but you just crack in as a group. When I was a young player, fit player, these were great sessions. These were a lot of fun and really great to be able to build spirit, you know, 1v1 retrievals, go and get the ball, fight it out, get it back to the coach. And just when you thought the coach was about to catch it, he'd knock it away and say, go again. And so they were great. When I was an older player,
right,
and Monday to Friday became such a struggle, and just to get up for another game and you're the captain, to know that that's what's going to occur at training, it was such a difficult situation, because really you shouldn't be doing it, because you're compromising your ability to go out. But if you're the captain or a leader, you know you sort of have to. The last 5 years of my career, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do that stuff. And standing on the sidelines and watching the players go through it, that is the worst position to be in at a football club as a leader, because you just feel so guilty that you're not putting in the work like the rest of the boys. But these are really, in terms of physical preparation, these are the only moves a coach can go to in season.
So when you were paired up, and were there the odd player that you were desperate to avoid, or was the odd player that you actually, I wouldn't mind giving you a bit of a workout.
Both. Yep. Absolutely. I would try to avoid Stephen Baker like the plague, and you'd usually pair up like for like size wise. And so it was always good to go with someone intelligent, like a Jason Blake down at St Kilda for me, because you knew he was smart enough not to try and kill you. Because at the end of the day, you are teammates. But there are some that you just, you know, guys, if there was a guy that was on the bubble of playing senior footy or getting dropped to the VFL, don't go near them because you know they're training for a spot in the team. So you really did need to think your way through these situations.
1-300-736-736 to join us this Thursday morning. Fox Footy's Nick Riewoldt is in the studio. All Matters Footy. We'll branch out a little bit too. We'll talk leadership. Aaron Finch was captivating yesterday and he spoke about the responsibilities and the burden of being the leader and what that looks like when you go out to perform and when you can't fulfill your role and what that looks like in meetings when you're trying to impose standards and the like. So we'll drift to that as we go along. Tell Jared, not a cloud in the sky at Warrnambool yet from where we'd rather be. If you are at the Bull and you want to share it, if you're on your way to the Bull, 1-300-736-736. I know Sydney caught your eye this week, Nick. It's interesting when moments happen that they trigger. I lived through that.
Been there.
Yeah. So John Longmire, short of using the word rebuild, he gave it a really clear airing as to what Sydney's predicament is at 1-5. What they've been trying to do, reinvent the team on the run, but now it is the prioritisation of discovering the next group, and the only way to do that is through youth.
Well, he didn't necessarily declare a rebuild per se, but I think the messaging was pretty clear in terms of we as in everyone outside of the Sydney football squad needs to understand that this is a different team. This is not the same team that we've been used to playing finals every year that have been really – they're always really hard to play against Sydney, even just the style, I think, is a precursor to that. But having lived it, it is a precarious time for a football club, and it's all in the messaging. So for Sydney coming into this season, the external expectation from a lot of us so-called experts, was that they were going to fall away a little bit and struggle to make the finals. There's no way that conversation was occurring internally. So they would have been speaking about the possibility for this group to go again, to go to the well again, to find a way, and that's all well and good. So when at round six you're sitting 1-5 and the coach makes a statement like he did, well then it's almost time for a bit of a deep breath as a playing group, particularly the senior players, because the senior players are really in tune to the sort of conversations that the coach would be having publicly. So in 2013, when I was at St Kilda, and I refer to a lot of these St Kilda situations because it's my lens on what is occurring.
Yep.
And we'd gone through, so we'd gone to the heights of 9 and 10 and close and Ross Lyon, 2011, still made finals, and then Rossi left, and 2012 we had a really down year. But at the start of 2013, we had a great preseason camp. We spoke about, okay, I think we're ready. We think this young group, we're ready to kick again, albeit we'd lost Brendan Goddard. There was a lot of change going on, and We started the season 0-2, and Scotty Waters, coach at the time, after we'd spent the whole summer talking about the prospect of playing finals, came out at 0-2 and said, we're in a rebuild.
And my memory of that, it was on crunch time the morning after, so you'd lost by 17 points to Richmond. And my memory of it is he did the interview on crunch time and it was almost a stop the car moment, go, whoa, from the outside. So from the inside?
From the inside it was, well, What do you mean? Are we like, okay? Well, no one's told us. So that conversation occurred much further down the track when all of the senior players that remained, because there was still a fallout that was going to occur from this point in time. So Nick Dal Santo at the end of the season was going to be gone. Ben McAvoy was going to be traded. So there was going to be a lot of moves that were going to occur subsequent to Scott Waters making that statement. But for those of us that were still there and really invested, it was a huge moment where we just thought, well, when was this decision made? Because we're only 2 weeks removed from talking about the possibility of the group playing finals. So I wouldn't say it rubbed the group up the wrong way at the time, because the way 2013 panned out for us, that was an accurate statement. But really, I felt like the decision to go down the rebuild path hadn't fully been established or decided on by the club at that stage. Obviously, they went right through with it in terms of trading all the players and moving on really quickly. But gee, it's a to pull that rein without having spoken to the and prepared the senior players for that was big, because we needed to have a purpose as senior players. So if our purpose isn't playing finals, if our purpose isn't winning a flag, because we'd come so close as well, that was such a heightened goal and achievement. So all of a sudden we're in a rebuild. It's like, well, no, I'm saying your chance is gone to do that. We're in a rebuild. And you need the senior players on side if that's the path you're going to go down.
So do you remember the next day, the next few days, the next couple of weeks as to how you got your heads around it?
There were a lot of conversations occurring as to, you know, what's the motivation like now? What's our role as senior players? Are we going to start playing the kids? And we did. So things changed pretty dramatically, and I got the sense that it took the edge off. It took a little bit of the edge off driving those really high standards and winning being the absolute priority for us as a group. Now we were brought along for the ride and we needed to become a part of what was really important later down the track. So it became about legacy, you know. I arrived at the club in 2001 where we were down the bottom of the ladder, but we had Robert Harvey, we had Andrew Thompson, we had really strong senior players teaching us the right way. Now, they became a part of the next push in 2004 and 2005, and that was a much quicker bounce. So for us, it was, okay, well, maybe our chance isn't gone, but we need to embrace this rebuild as senior players. We need to be on the same page as the club, as the coach, and understand that, okay, winning right now might not be the priority. It's getting games into these kids and teaching them the right way in the hope that when we do bounce, we'll still be around to see it.
Nick Riewoldt, fascinating insights into what's happened in the past and how these things echo.
So they would repeat. They would be the conversations that Lance Franklin, you know, Heath Grundy, Jared McVeigh, Josh Kent, all of those guys you would think would be having their responsibility now as senior players with the young kids.
1-300-736-736 to join Nick this morning. Nick is in Williams Landing on Mouthguards in at training. Hello, Nick.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well.
That's good. Just wondering, do you think maybe Melbourne's form something to do with the players and their revolt a couple of years ago about pre-season training being a little bit too hard for them, and that maybe this is the chickens have come home to roost in their form slump, that it's getting a little bit too hard for them now and they're not up to it?
Good question, Nick. We've looked really as analysts at everything. Where is this drop in Melbourne's form come from? So the preseason camp last year, it was Adelaide, wasn't it? So they had the tumultuous off season with the camp, with Jake Lever leaving and the words, so with the demons of the grand final that in their heads, and so this year it's Melbourne, and we're drilling down, we're trying to analyse, we're trying to find reasons. We've spoken about Stephen May coming in, upsetting the apple cart potentially. We don't know. We don't know what the real reasons are, but clearly they're not playing the way that they played last year. A lot of it, I still think, is really system based. They look like they're giving great effort or good effort in the contest. So when you're watching at home and on the television, you see the players in the screen and they're cracking in. The Melbourne players are cracking in. But outside of that, if you watch them live or you watch behind the goals, their system looks a little bit broken defensively. So they're 2-1 players. They're rolling off at the wrong time. They're coming forward at the wrong time. And they just can't score. That is the real issue. They can't score. So whether not wanting to go on a preseason camp and not wanting to put themselves at risk translates to that 2 years down the track, there's no way of knowing. But what is clear is the drop away has been severe, and it has to have come from somewhere. And that's why we do what we do, because we try to find the answers.
Good on you, Nick. There's questions piling up on the text, which I'll pose to you as well. 0433 98 11 16. Feel free to join us. 1300 736 736. Nick Riewoldt is in the studio. We'll talk about the responsibilities and the burden of captaincy as we go along. Nick Riewoldt in the studio this Thursday morning. Your questions are piling up. Nick, can I please ask how it came to be that Ben McAvoy left as a Hawk? I can't believe you let him go at the age he was in 2013. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I can't believe it either. History would show that it was a really poor decision because Ben McAvoy leaves, in comes Shane Savage and a pick, I think Luke Dunstan from memory. Ben McAvoy's gone on to be a premiership player and a great leader of the Hawthorn Football Club. The reason that move was made also was because Del Santo got traded out, Billy Longo came in as that pick, Goddard got traded out, Tom Hickey came in as that pick. So the club thought that they had enough backup in terms of ruckman. Billy Longo's, you know, played his first game for the year last week but struggled, and Tom Hickey's now at another club. So a poor move, and that's why going to a rebuild, that's not the panacea to fixing all your football club woes, because the bottom line is you've got to nail your picks. And we've seen teams, so St Kilda, Carlton, Melbourne, rebuilds take a very, very long time, assuming you get all your picks right. So it is dangerous. I'm not convinced that the complete rebuilds are the answer anymore. No. Because essentially the difference between the best team and the worst team every year is in terms of what they're able to bring into the club outside of free agents is one pick, 18 picks apart. That is the only difference. And we know in AFL footy, one player can make a difference, but not an 18-year-old kid. We're not talking about the NFL where you can draft a quarterback that's the most important position, or you can draft a basketball player in the NBA where it's one in five blokes on the court, which is 20% of the team. So a rebuild is not the sole answer. If you get all your picks right and you're able to add complementary pieces along the way, well then, you know, that's why we've seen teams like Geelong, teams like Hawthorn be able to do that along the journey and remain really competitive and viable.
Dan's in Pasco Vale. Welcome to you, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Jared. Morning, Nick.
Morning.
Just on this rebuild question, is Ross Lyon the best coach at the moment after the first six rounds? Because he's no longer a rebuild coach. He's the side that Fremantle play at the moment. There's only two kids in the lineup under 22, and they're Chera and Brayshaw, so they're very good kids. And the guys sort of next in line to come in are Stephen Hill and Sanderlands and Ballantyne and Kirsten and Blakely. So he's really not rebuilding anymore. He's got a solid senior core of players.
You make a really good point, Dan. I guess when we think rebuild, that the term generates thoughts of kids. But a rebuild of the list can be you just completely rebuild it with mature age players, which is what Fremantle have done. And you could absolutely mount an argument that Ross Lyon is the coach of the year so far based on their win-loss, but also their style. It's clear that they're still defensively really hard to score against, which has been a hallmark of Ross Lyon coached teams over the journey. But they're scoring again, Jared. They're hitting the scoreboard, which has always been the criticism of Ross coached teams, that they have allowed the opposition to stay in the games for longer. I don't subscribe to this, but this has been the theory because they've never put enough scoreboard pressure on. But they look to have found a more consistent avenue to goal this year, and that might be personnel, but it's definitely system based as well.
So that they're the hybrid, aren't they? They took their picks, they got more picks, so the pick they got for Weller out of the Suns, and then it was almost like they were short circuiting the rebuild, which drew criticism as they went along because they kept adding mature age players as well. But that's your point: is if you rebuild on both fronts, not just picks, it has delivered them now a forward setup which they've been aching for.
And AFL lists, they're big lists, so 40, you know, mid 40 players on a list. That's why I don't have an issue with the Harley Bunnells of the world and the Aaron Sanderlands and the Hayden Ballantynes having a spot on the list because they're good senior players.
More with Nick Riewoldt. We're just going to take the news headlines with Meredith. Full board, of course, for Nick Riewoldt, who's in the studio after 10. David Gallup, the chief executive of FFA. 1-300-736-736. Jay is in Craigieburn. Jay, welcome.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Good.
Good, Jay.
That's good. Mate, I'm just interested in hearing Nick's comments on when you change your focus in a rebuild as a senior player and say you drop your standards. I would have thought it would be better that, more beneficial. I can remember going through one just at local level, but setting that standard and not being happy with being defeated every week in, week out and being filthy about it, I think would set a better example for the younger players. Is it what you're talking about, just to focus in yourself individually, that you're not expecting to win?
Yeah, no, when I mean drop your standards, I mean absolutely not in the preparation or the mental application, but standards might have been the wrong word. It's the expectation becomes lessened, and it's not necessarily a playing group emotion or sentiment, but I think it becomes a club sentiment, that the expectation comes off a little bit. But it is a really dangerous time, because if that filters too much through the playing group, well then it can become really dangerous, because if all of a sudden your focus is too much on development and too much on rebuild, well then, you know, the high standards that you're talking about, they don't get held to the same level of accountability. So it's a great call, Jay, but no, I was more talking about the expectation.
So Adrian in Chelsea sort of tapped into this. If you play in any competition, then winning absolutely is a part of the development rebuild. You need to learn how to win. Getting games in for experience and losing will only teach losing. So winning must hold a high focus in a development and or rebuild.
Yeah, and again, if players get a whiff of winning not being the absolute priority, and this is a really fine balance for a coach and integrity of selection. Because if you're so determined and hell bent on getting games into a young player, but week after week after week the player's getting away with things they shouldn't be getting away with, well then that can spiral through a group really quickly, and all of a sudden you essentially lose whatever trademark or set of values you want to live and stand by. So it is a dangerous time, and finding that right balance is really important. And having the senior players be a part of that conversation to essentially endorse the messaging, endorse the importance on, maintaining really high standards. We understand the expectation externally has come off, and even potentially internally, because senior players are aware of that. Well, then, you need to get that balance right.
Luke is on the road to the ball. Hello to you, Luke.
Thank you very much, Jared.
What draws you down there today?
Yeah, so you posed the question a little bit earlier, Jared, about what does pull you towards the ball. And for me, it probably is really, so I'm only 30, I've been going about 4 or 5 years now, and it really is just that, I suppose, the point in time on the calendar and the place in the world that, is vulnerable each year, that sort of, just draws you back. Life goes on throughout the year, and then sort of, that allure of, the point in the calendar and the point in time. And to someone who is, just 30, who has been targeted by, the VRC with the All-Star Miles and the Everest up in Sydney, so the more I've, brought into that and what they've been trying to do, the more that it's sort of, drawn me to, round out my racing experience with, carnivals such as May down in Warrnambool. So sort of, that allure of, the more I get drawn into the city racing, the more I want to seek out experiences such as Warrnambool.
Where have you watched the Grand Annual from so far in the years going?
Just up on the hill there, and I suppose that was the magic when you hear Rick McIntosh for the first time saying things such as, this is bigger than the Super Bowl, how good's the ball, everything like that. The first time you hear that, you think, oh, well, I reckon I'll come back a few more times.
What have you got the overcoat and a cap in the car? What have you gone with today?
Not the full Bill McLaughlin, but I think I'll leave that for years to come.
Good on you, Luke. Have a great day. I'd like to be in the car with you, to be honest.
Thanks very much, Jared. Cheers. Much appreciated.
Good on you. The May Racing Carnival. It's a terrific Thursday. It's been through It's been through its challenges and it's thriving out the other side. So Luke's on his way to the Bull. We'll have a little bit more as we go. Sean, Ray, Stephen, George, Dan, Rod, you've got a full board ready to talk to you. Nick, we'll clear the break and continue with Nick Riewoldt. This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And the BMW End of Financial Year event is now on at Doncaster BMW.
Huge anxiety based on the World Cup coming up, being the captain of the side and not getting the output that I wanted and leading from the front. When I think of Australian captains and going back, Ricky Ponting, Steve Waugh, Mark Taylor, Alan Border, everyone leads from the front. And I was getting really frustrated that I was, again, I was preparing and doing everything that I thought that I could to succeed. It just wasn't happening. The support that I was getting from the players and the coaches was unbelievable. But there's still in the back of your mind, you're thinking, geez, the World Cup's not far away. And as a captain of the side, I could be left out of the World Cup squad and things like that. So then you start putting unrealistic and unnecessary pressure on yourself to perform when you can't control any of that anyway.
A glimpse into the soul of a captain. That was Aaron Finch in the studio yesterday. It's there on the podcast. If you want to understand something about the psyche of a sportsman, of a leader, Aaron couldn't have done a better job in expressing it. There'd be elements in that I'm sure that would resonate with you, Nick.
Nothing worse as a captain than being out of form. And still being tasked or having the responsibility to hold teammates accountable, to drive the standards of the group, to constantly refer to a trademark that you might not be living up to yourself. And football's probably a little bit different because we place so much effort, emphasis on giving great effort. So you can be giving great effort and you're just not in form. But cricket, effort's hard to... It's hard to visualise. It's hard to see because you can be giving great effort and just getting out all the time. Taylor Walker is probably the example I look at from this year that as captain has been a guy that has been really publicly challenged and out of form to start the season. But then when you're able to get over the hump, which Aaron Finch has been able to done, and on the weekend it looks like Tex was able to do, he started launching for his marks again, crashing packs. The response from your teammates is enormous because they are... They ride that with you, and they because you are the figurehead as captain, and so you bear the brunt. So when you're able to turn the corner, your teammates get a really big lift from that.
All right, so Sean's in North Dandenong for you, Nick. Sean, welcome.
Morning, gentlemen. Nick, love the insight that you give when it comes to rebuild, especially from a captain so knowledgeable and so recent in the game. I'm a North Melbourne supporter, and as a smaller club, we can't afford a full rebuild. Bums on seats get you big games, and if you're not winning games, you don't get the big games. I think what's become exceptionally important is the drafting team. Top 10, top 15, generally you're going to get a decent player out of that. It's after that that you've really got to know what you're doing, and then even on top of that, you need a bit of luck. A Mason Wood could be anything, but injuries have sort of culled him a little bit. An Ed Vickers-Willis continues to get injured. A Sam Durden doesn't get on the ground. And they're the things that become vitally important. And that's where somewhere like Geelong and Wells have done exceptionally well. Their drafting is spot on. And so for the littler teams that can't afford a rebuild like North, the drafting has to be amazingly good.
Yeah, well, that's the issue with going through a full rebuild, bottom-out rebuild, is there's no guarantees you're going to get your picks right. There's no guarantee that your system is well enough equipped, particularly as one of the lesser clubs. So, you know, North Melbourne, St Kilda, some of those that aren't enamoured with as much, I guess, financial power and resource, although that's been evened out with the equalisation stuff. But, yeah, if you get your picks wrong, if you go down a rebuild and you get them wrong, you're in big trouble.
Rod's in Wanturna. Fire away, Rod.
G'day, gentlemen. How are you? Very interesting listening to the comments about the rebuild. And I think sometimes rebuilds are actually forced upon you, especially when there's a host of injuries. I quote the Collingwood side of last year, and even to the extent St Kilda, maybe even Richmond of this year. You know, you've got to be, you know, sometimes you've got to be mindful. You've got to look at your list, and you've got to make sure that you've picked as best you can, because sometimes it's forced upon you. I mean, Collingwood were without something like 10 or 15 of their best players last year, and have been for a few years, yet they were still able to maintain the right standards with the youngsters coming up. They were actually forced into that situation. And I think St Kilda's doing very similar thing this year. So rebuilds are sometimes forced upon you, and you've got to make do in dictating who you choose in a draft is so very, very important, because if you get that wrong, no matter how strong you are of a club, you're going to fail.
Free agency is the other element that has really changed rebuilds and what they look like. We know now that clubs have the capacity to trade future picks, so it is a different scenario from the way it was positioned, say 20 years ago, where the draft was the only vehicle to be able to bring players into your club. Obviously now, of course, other than trade, but free agency is a different beast, and the strong clubs like the Geelongs and the Hawthorns that have never truly bottomed out, they've managed the both of those as well as anyone, the draft and the free agency acquisitions.
Ray's in Ashwood. Welcome, Ray.
Yeah, hi, Nick. I think St Kilda's major resurgence this year has been through list manager, new coaches. They've really sort of turned things around. I think they're pretty astute with picking up a few of the mature age players as well. And also, I'm wondering about, I think it's worthwhile having maybe one or two games of Moorabbin against some Gold Coast or interstate teams. And one last thing, I bought your book, loved it, read it when we were in Europe. It reminded me of my family, who's got a German background, and had a bit of a laugh over it too, by the way.
Oh, good man. Thank you, Ray. Glad you enjoyed it. Painstaking process writing yeah. A book. Oh, I'm glad that one's over, but enjoyed it. Yeah, look, the Saints, I think the mature age recruiting is... So Kane Lambert goes to Richmond a few years ago and comes in and just performs brilliantly straight away. And it was like all clubs looked at that and thought, gee, that's a great path to go down, because those mature age players out of the state leagues, they're a known quantity because you've been able to see them mature and develop. And so St Kilda have done that with Matty Parker, who's having a great season. He's been really, really exciting to watch. Robbie Young's another guy, Callum Wilkie. So these more mature bodies, because – let's be honest, 18-year-old kids, they're not fully grown, they're not fully developed, they're coming out of a system where they're playing against other kids, and if you are one of the bigger, faster, stronger kids, you just dominate at that level. So it is a competition that more clubs are turning to stockpile talent. The Saints system has changed a lot, though. That is, the way they're playing is more suited to the players that they've got, and they're reaping the benefits.
Stephen's in Doncaster. Stephen.
G'day, boys. Got one from left field for you, Nick. I remember reading a couple of years ago, not sure which paper it was, and had a photo of you with a Collingwood jumper on.
Yeah.
How close were you going, and who initiated that? We all knew how it played out,
yeah.
or the end of it was, but how close were you?
Oh, look, I had a conversation, and Eddie doesn't mind me telling this story. He quite enjoys it, I think. But Eddie initiated a conversation, and that was around the time that the Saints had declared, no, we are going full rebuild mode. So all of a sudden, for players like myself and Lee Montagna, who had come really close to winning a flag, that prospect had really disappeared, and we weren't sure whether we'd be able to hang around long enough to see us come out the other side. So the question became, gee, do I go somewhere for one last crack at it, or do I hang around and do for the young kids what Robert Harvey, Fraser Gehrig, Aaron Hamill, these guys did for me as a young player? And at that stage of my career, there are no guarantees that you're going to pick the right team, because 3 years ago, no one, if you had your choice at the end of the year to say you can pick one team to go to try and win a flag, no one would have picked the Bulldogs. No one would have picked Richmond. And I'm not sure many, a few, but not sure many would have picked West Coast. So it's a lottery, really. We'll see how this year plays out. And for me, the lure of being a one-club player, I'd been there for 13 years by that stage, was just too strong.
George is in Northcote. Hello, George.
Yes, g'day, guys. Two quick questions for Nick. One is, if Paddy McCartan comes back this year, would you play him down back, as Matthew Richardson suggested earlier this week? And with St Kilda really lacking one more key forward, Max King's about a week or 2 weeks away from resuming in the VFL. How soon would you bring him in?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I think, Richo has got onto the Matty Richardson's got onto the Paddy down back train the last couple of weeks. We've been onto that one for a little while. He's so well suited to play behind the ball. So I see him quite similar to Jeremy McGovern in his ability to to pack Mark. And I just think having the game in front of him from that point of view would be great for his, not just his, you know, his concussion issues, because really you got to play where you're best suited. I think he'd be really well suited to play down back. So just got the fingers crossed for him that he's able to find a way back into the system.
Sneak one more in. Dan's in Rye. Hello, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Jared and Nick. Just a quick question about Melbourne. I just find the implosion of our club at the present time extraordinary, given the predictions that we had coming into this year. The other thing about fitness levels, in addition to that, is that 6 months ago, a new CEO was appointed in Gary Peart. Last June, Caroline Wilson wrote an article in The Age saying that this had caused a lot of disharmony and ruction behind the scenes at Melbourne. Now, without wanting to muckrake, can you draw a bow between what's happened off the field and what's happened on the field?
Difficult to draw the bow between, particularly at CEO level and the way the players are playing. That generally doesn't filter through a playing group. They don't, concern themselves with who's the CEO. They don't necessarily get involved. Some of the senior players, but the vast majority won't get involved in those sort of politics. I still really just do see it as a lot of system issues for Melbourne. Purely on field system issues. Their timing's out. They're not spreading, and a lot of the strengths that they had as a group last year, teams have gone to work on them. They've gone to school on them, and it is rectifiable for Melbourne. But we blow the torch on them really yep. strongly based off the expectation and predictions going into the season.
One more with Nick after the break.
The 2019 NFL Draft. The New York Giants select Daniel Jones.
Oh!
Reaction of Giants fans to their first round draft pick in the NFL.
Speaking of rebuilds, Jared, we think it's rough over here on kids getting picked up and the expectations placed on them. Spare a thought for New York Giants fans. Pick 6 in this year's draft. Daniel Jones, boos from New York fans at their home stadium when the pick came through. They don't know whether he's going to turn out to be a great player or not, but this is the best day in this kid's life. He's coming from Duke University. He's been quarterback there for a few seasons, and he is greeted from his new team, his new family, and their fans with boos and cries of, oh, no. Incredible scenes.
Michael from East Doncaster texts through, Nick, I saw every one of your games. You were never out of form. You're in good form today. Good on you.
Good to see you,
mate. See you for the call tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's going to be a beauty.
Right here on SEN. After the break, David Gallop, the chief executive of FFA, joins me after the news.